You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Colin Cudmore. Colin is the inventor of the Garden Tower and founder of the Garden Tower Project. Based in Bloomington, Indiana, their mission is to help transform the face of gardening and food sustainability in our world. To us, food security is more than just growing your own food. It is about growing healthy food. In an era of rapidly rising food prices and industrial farming practices that strip our food of nutrients, essential for good health, we believe the Garden Tower is one small step in empowering people towards their own food security. To this end, we plan to launch growing circles as support becomes available. So let's welcome Colin to the show now. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm very well. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Well, I guess a little bit of background for the listeners is that I got very interested in permaculture and exopermaculture through your mom.
Right, I know.
And Creole Camp. And she's quite a wonderful lady and an activist, and she has a lot of wonderful projects that she works on as well. And so that really perked up my ears. And then she mentioned that you had the Garden Tower, And so I became a participant in the funding project and got a garden tower, and I absolutely love it. So I just wanted to put that out there at the beginning of the show that this is really an idea whose time has come.
Yeah, you're actually using one, so you're speaking with authority. For anybody that is curious what we're actually talking about. If you have a computer nearby, it might be helpful for people to go into gardentowerproject.com, and they can kind of follow along as we speak, and they can see how it works, and they can see hundreds of photographs of it producing bountiful harvests of healthy vegetables. So that would be one way people can do it, and of course there's a Facebook page. But yeah, if it weren't for my mother, I would not have invented it, and that's kind of an interesting story. I'll first kind of describe what it is and then describe its creation.
Okay.
What I set out to do initially was to solve the problem of food deserts, not just in this country, but hopefully on a global level once I, you know, have the ability to do that. And food deserts are basically areas of this country, particularly urban areas, but not necessarily, where people lack access to fresh or organic food or both. And it's usually because they live in poor areas and these big food chains don't often choose to set up shop in some of these poor neighborhoods. So they may have transportation issues, they may have, you know, physical disabilities, whatever, but there are literally millions of people throughout this country that are living off processed food because they don't have access. And I thought that that was a problem that I would tackle, and I can get into that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But what I ended up coming up with, for the people that aren't on the website to see it, it kind of looks like a vertical drum, like what anyone would picture a drum looking like. It's about 50 gallons. You know, a drum looks like it's about a 50-gallon drum. It's hollow on the inside and has a whole bunch of openings on the outside that are specially formed so that you can get a starter plant in. And what people do is they put soil on the inside of the drum and they put their plant on the outside. Yet running through the center of the drum, there's a 6-inch tube, and that tube has over 150 3/4-inch circular holes running from the top to the bottom. And the point of that tube is you can put your kitchen scraps inside the tube with red wiggler worms, which are very common bait worms used for fishing, which you can get at, you know, bait shops or sporting goods stores or over the internet. And the idea there is you're creating a vermicompost within a soil system. And the benefit of that is your plant roots will have direct access to organic fertilizer. And when plants don't have to fight for nutrients, they're much healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they grow much quicker, and they grow very nutrient dense. And what we've learned with experimentation with the Garden Tower is that the initial 45 holes that we offer people to put their plants in, you can double your plants. Most green leafy vegetables can be doubled up in those holes because there's so much nutrient availability. So you can do 90 on the side and then say another 5 to 6 to 7 on top. So you can really grow a lot of food, and it takes up about 4 square feet on your deck or your lawn, stands about 4 feet tall, maybe a little bit less than 4 feet, and it rotates because this newest version that we've created with this Kickstarter funding that you participated in, I incorporated nylon ball bearings into the base of the unit so that you can, if you're in an urban setting and you don't have a lot of room on your balcony, as opposed to having to have access all the way around this circular unit, you can kind of push it into a corner and spin it when you need to access your vegetables. So you can pull up a chair, sit down, harvest your garden, and pull the vegetables to you as you rotate the unit. And so it's a way to give people, you know, access to food, healthy food, organic food, where they previously wouldn't. And the story is really interesting. My mom, this goes back about 4 years ago. I had been in Bloomington. I'd moved here from the East Coast probably less than a year, I'm guessing, before this happened. And my mom asked me to attend a lecture at Indiana University. And the lecture was given by a gentleman named Will Allen, who is the operator of an outfit up in Milwaukee called Growing Power. And he's a real maverick. He's probably been doing this, I think, over 3 decades, where he will take refuge from his city, like wood chips and lawn clippings and rotted food from supermarkets, leaves, things like this, and people will deliver it to him. And he'll create incredibly rich soil, compost on his facility. And then he'll bring that soil into urban areas and plant organic gardens and teach the people how to maintain them and then travel on and repeat the process. And that's how we started. And he has these type of operations now, I believe, all over the world, certainly all over this country. But he's a real maverick in the organic, you know, accessibility movement. And he really inspired me because he was the one that coined that food desert term and brought to my attention the need for a solution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, I have not really solved that problem because most people in urban areas, you know, that live in cities and high rises, they don't know a solution exists. Therefore, they're not looking for one. They don't believe one exists. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to reach those people. They're not reading gardening magazines and going on gardening blogs and gardening websites. You know, if they would, they might find me. And it would take an enormous advertising budget to reach those people. So it's going to happen slowly. Mm-hmm. You know, currently my customers are mostly suburban,
right.
Unfortunately. And we've sold, I'd have to check, but we're approaching 6,000. We're somewhere in the 5,000 range. And most of those were with what I call the first generation, which was hand-built. And we just did this Kickstarter. I think it was about 90 days ago, if I'm correct, Lance, that it ended.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. And what we're looking for those people that aren't familiar with Kickstarter, it's a public funding site where people can avoid using banks. And if you have a creative project and you need money to bring it to fruition, you can put a site up, you put a page up on this Kickstarter site, explain to the people what you're doing, and they can help you fund it, and you give them rewards for helping you fund it. So for us, you know, the main reward was if you donate a certain amount of money, we will send you a garden tower. And what we were hoping for on this latest Kickstarter round was the ability to place, if we raised enough money, our initial order from the factory, once the dies were all set, the tools were all set, and the machines, if the initial order was big enough, the cost per unit would come down. So we were trying to get that initial order up there, and we were seeking, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of $43,000. And we have a huge fan base following us for the last 4 years. We ended up raising $440,000, which is really just amazing. And sold well over 1,000 towers through that that Kickstarter project. And Kickstarter is wonderful in that it kind of puts you on the map. It's free advertising beyond all the other benefits it brings you. So that was really exciting for us. And we've had some trials and tribulations going into this next step, this next generation. Our molds, we've had some issues with our molds and some issues with our initial plastic. So we've switched plastic, repaired molds, and we're about to make new molds.
Oh.
We're currently using a high-density HDPE, which is a polyethylene, which is a food-grade plastic. It's the same food grade that you would find in plastic forks, milk jugs, things like this. And it doesn't have any phthalates in it, any BPAs. It's completely food grade safe. It's the easiest plastic to recycle, and the only thing that we add to it is a little bit of pigment, which is also a food grade pigment, to produce the color, and a little bit of UV protection, so that it doesn't break down in the sun as fast as it would without that. And so we expect the lifespan to be about 10 years, which means you will probably produce thousands of dollars worth of produce.
Wow!
After your initial purchase.
Well, one of the things that I like about it that that you didn't mention is that in addition to the central core with the holes in it, where you put the red wigglers, and that's kind of a whole underground market in itself. The vermiculture market is
it's
becoming
exploding,
enormous.
Yeah.
But you know, the table scraps are what they feed off of through the bacteria. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so it's just an amazing process, and for kids, especially, I imagine this would be quite an experiment to teach
it
and
sure
learn
is.
And just get your hands wet in the soil, and also it collects the water through a at the bottom.
Yep.
So if there is excess water that comes out through the various layers of this tower. Then the water's collected, and that's tea. That's considered a compost or organic tea, and you take that out and you pour it back in the top.
Well,
and
it's really a leachate, Lance. If we were to claim it was tea, it would have to actually be oxygenated.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yes, so it's basically a nutrient-rich leachate. Now, that doesn't mean it's lacking the microbial content. It certainly has microbial content. It would be improved if we were to oxygenate it.
Oh, yeah, geez.
That's another accessory that we will be launching next year, which
wow.
is a way to do that quite conveniently.
Wow.
But what you're basically doing is each time you water the garden tower, whatever water isn't held in the soil system or immediately used by the plant roots does drip down into a container. Because the plastic wraps around the plants, well, people would have to look at the picture to understand it, but there's very little evaporation in a design like this.
For
you folks out in California, I mean, it is the solution. It uses very little water. We actually have a couple out in Arizona that live right on the edge of the canyon, and they had tried literally everything. They said they designed raised bed, keyhole, permaculture, road, everything. They tried every form of gardening. They have a lot of wind, they have a lot of sun, and they have very sandy soil.
Mm-hmm.
So they were using 50 gallons for 50 plants.
Wow.
Every time they watered, and it was just, you know, that's not sustainable. So
right.
they switched to the garden tower, and their water usage went down 90%.
Wow, it's phenomenal.
So you can
see really
it.
Is.
Yeah, it really is. And it's the irony is there's so many benefits that we now, as a project, and I have several people working with me on this, it's not just me, the irony is that there's several aspects of the design that are really beneficial that were not intended.
Oh,
were not even realized.
Huh.
Initially, you know, the way it saves water, I mean, I didn't know it was going to do that when I designed it. I just was like one of those things, like, wow, that really seems to work well. and I didn't know, you know, it's going to cut down on the evaporation so much. I didn't realize you'd be able to double up the plants because of the nutrient availability. I didn't realize that my timing would be perfect with the advent of the explosion of interest in vermicompost. With the drought situation in the entire half of this country. I mean, there's so many reasons that it makes sense right now. To me, the most important is the ability to take back control of your food. You don't have to plant with genetically modified seeds. You can choose to eat healthy. And this product makes it really easy to do that because it's very easy to use. You really don't need to have gardening experience. We have a very good set of instructions, lots of information on our website, Garden Tower Project. And it's kind of idiot-proof. And to go back to the education end of it, you're right. I don't know the actual count. My partner, Tom Tlusty, would have that information. But I think we're probably in something like 36 school systems, and it's rapidly climbing, and several universities, one university, in fact, Clemson, has written a couple peer-review papers on it and are writing curriculum for it at the university level, because there's so many aspects of this that can be used for education, not just recycling of your food scraps, but you know, growing organic food, and you know, the ability to save so much water in agriculture. So that they're really looking at it closely. And one of the things that we're going to be doing this winter is a study which will be open sourced, where I'm trying to determine if a family or a school system, but in particularly a family, really wanted to take control of their food and wanted to grow, you know, a few hundred vegetables at the same time, but didn't have the space, they could put up a greenhouse that's 10 by 12, at least the one I'm modeling is 10 foot by 12 foot, and it's a dual-wall polycarbonate, so it's a rigid greenhouse. It you can buy them for $600. When they go on sale through a company called Harbor Freight. And what I'm doing is I'm designing systems where I can use readily available biomass in your community. In particular, wood chips, I think, will probably end up being the one that we focus on. But it also could be your lawn clippings, your leaves, your twigs, your newspaper cardboard, rotted food, you know, things like this. And I'm trying to figure out how you can pull the heat out of that exothermic reaction that your compost goes through,
to
heat
your
greenhouse without using any fuel.
Right.
And this is not an invention of mine. I'm just trying to perfect how people do this. This was invented by a gentleman named Jean Payne in the 70s, and I believe he was in Switzerland, and he was working for the Forestry Service over there, and he one day realized he was just throwing away all of this, you know, essentially fuel, and he decided to haul it to his house. He built a huge pile, I think it was about 25 feet in diameter, 12 feet tall. He watered it down as he built it, and he ran through it loops of 1 1/4 inch black ABS piping, and he pumped water through that, and the compost heated up to about 140 degrees within about a week, and ran 140 degrees for 18 months.
Wow.
So he was able to heat his house and have hot water for his sink and his shower for free for 18 months from this pile of wood chips that was outside his door. And the irony to me is that you don't see this utilized really anywhere, and it does not make sense to me. We have biomass everywhere that's rotting, and we could be pulling heat from it for free.
Oh, yeah.
So I've designed a few new products that I'm going to open source that are going to allow me to test in 6 different greenhouses this winter, 6 different methods of extracting that heat. Some of the piles will be on the outside of the greenhouse, you know, kind of pushed up against it so there's a little bit of thermal mass heat going into it. But I will be running not only air pipe but water pipe through some of these. Some of the biomass or the compost will be inside in some of the other greenhouses where I have the ability to put it in a container, turn it whenever I want to increase the oxygen, use a solar air heater that I've designed to actually accelerate the exothermic reaction. I don't want it to take 5 days. I want it to take 1 day. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to not only pull the heat out of it to heat the greenhouse, I'm trying to accelerate the speed at which you turn this biomass into usable soil, usable compost, because that's something you can sell. So a family that wanted to put up one of these greenhouses that's, once again, only 10 by 12 feet, could put 5 towers in it, and they could sell the food from those 5 towers, and depending on what they grow, if they grow green leafy vegetables, they could grow up to 700 plants in a 10 by 12 greenhouse, and then they could start producing piles of either compost or worm castings, because you'll have the option of taking this ready-made compost and putting it in the worm farm that's also within the greenhouse that I've designed. So they'll have three things that they can sell at their farmer's market.
Wow, that's
amazing. And it will not
take
a lot of work. So, yeah, and at the same time, heat without the use of fossil fuels. So that's what I'm going to be working on this winter, as well as some of accessory products to accompany the garden tower.
Wow, that is absolutely incredible, and it's so timely, and it's so needed.
It's so needed, yeah, and it's so readily available, and I don't understand why people aren't doing it.
Well, there's many reasons for that, and the main reason is that we're led by the nose in certain directions that cost money, and we're locked into electricity and gas and this and that and the other thing.
Yeah,
and
Even a lot of the people, Lance, that are turning away from the system aren't utilizing this method,
and that's
what's kind of surprising me. It's starting to catch on a little bit. If people were to go onto YouTube and just type in heating with compost, you'll find some information. You won't find a lot. You just won't find a lot. And what I think is lacking for people, and this is really the nature of my study, is what is the right recipe of biomass. Is, you know, wood chips obviously have a lot of inherent energy stored in them. They're much more dense than clippings or leaves or stuff like that. They're going to provide a tremendous amount of carbon. You then have to bring a ratio of nitrogen in it. What is the correct ratio? If you go on the internet, you talk to experts, it's a range. I want to know what the exact specific number is. So what is the recipe? What is the volume? What is the moisture level, and what natural accelerants can you add to the moisture as you saturate your pile? For instance, if you were to add to the water that you use to moisten up the pile, if you were to add a natural organic molasses, then you're providing the chloric content, the simple sugars for the microbes to repopulate and do what they do, and the microbes are incredibly important for your plants.
Oh, right,
so,
right.
Important for the plants, but also for the exothermic reaction of your compost. So I will be doing experiments outside of these greenhouses with probably 15 to 20 different biomass piles, where I'm looking at the ratio, what is the perfect recipe. And then when I figure out the recipe, you know, I'll have temperature gauges put at different levels throughout these piles.
Right.
And
Colin,
after 10 days, I'll take readings, and the perfect recipe, which will be then used in the six greenhouses where I test methods of heat extraction from that perfect recipe. And then at the end of the winter, I will publish the data on the internet. It will be free. So anybody that wants to replicate it or use it will have access to that. I think people will really enjoy the ability to not have to figure it out. They can
just go
to my YouTube channel. This guy did all the work.
Well, you know, it's through people trying new things and pioneering these and sharing the information that we will all get educated. And I think that there's just a pent-up need for this. And one of the things that there are several really important points about the garden tower and about what you're doing. And one is that the flavor of vegetables is entirely different.
It is.
When you have nutrient-rich soil. Now, when I was a kid, my grandparents came out from Kansas in a covered wagon to California, and they were pioneers. So I was raised on a ranch, and obviously there were no GMO foods then.
Right.
Everything was organic and natural, and they didn't use pesticides. And I'm telling you, the fruit trees and the corn and the bean, I mean, we had a field of food.
Yep.
And I couldn't eat enough. It was so good.
Delicious.
Everything tasted so rich and flavorful. And one of the things I found out over the years of researching this is that the land that corporations use has been used so many times that there are subtle nutrients that have long since been removed from the soil.
Sure.
The soil is not considered an active participant in. And so what happens is, with all of these poisons that are being used and the genetically modified organisms, there's no life left in the soil or the food.
Yeah. monoculture.
So this is why vegetables and things don't taste good that you get from the store, and why the kids don't want to eat them. So in this is something when I started tasting the vegetables, the lettuce and the arugula and things off the garden tower, it just exploded in my mouth. In fact, I gave some to my neighbor to try, and he couldn't stand it because it was too strong for him. These are the things that people are going to find out, that food actually has distinct flavors.
Sure.
And, it should explode in the mouth and create a sensation when those subtle nutrients are in the
Absolutely.
Soil.
And it's not just that you're getting the extra nutrients. The plant roots are actually feeding directly often into the compost tube itself. So it's super nutrient dense the way you're growing food in the system. But also, even if you're growing organically, depending on where you live, you may have pollution in your soil, especially in an urban area.
Oh, right,
so
right.
Even if you're growing organically, you may be poisoning yourself. Then your water may be poisoning you. Then you have chem spraying, which is raining down on your soil.
Right.
So, I mean, you want to start with a healthy, natural, organic bagged potting soil in the garden tower. So at least you're starting with an advantage of knowing it's not polluted, you know, and then you're adding, hopefully, organic kitchen scraps, and the worms are doing their thing. And I just don't think you can grow food in a healthier way than that. I mean, even in a hydroponic system, you're having to repurchase nutrients.
Right, right.
And you're needing to use fossil fuels to keep the plants alive. And if your power goes out, your plants die. And they're often very complicated.
This solves so many problems. And one of the things I saw as a possibility was people could... people that have tried this system could easily find time to donate one to a local rest home, for instance, and go in there once a week and just show the people that are in those retirement homes how to build it up from a layer to layer, and let them get they can be in wheelchairs because the whole thing rotates.
Yeah,
so
it's very easy.
It really brings life.
Yeah, it's wonderful for elderly and people with physical disabilities. I mean, I can't think of another system that makes food accessible to the disabled or the elderly like the garden tower. I mean, to be able to rotate your food to you is pretty revolutionary. I don't think there's another system that does that, as far as I know. And at the same time, makes it really easy to grow your food. I mean, it's like I said, it's pretty idiot-proof. We have a lot of kids having great success growing food. It's not just fun for them, but it's easy for them. So and once again, there's so many benefits that we just talked about that ironically wasn't even aware of when I initially designed it. I mean, my intention was just to give people access, and I just got really lucky with the design. And there's just so many benefits. Now I've improved upon the design from my first hand-built model, the first generation, to this next generation. With the addition of the drawer, makes it easier to collect the nutrients, makes it easier to collect the worm castings that congregate in the tube, and makes it easy to spin it with the bearings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit narrower and a little bit lighter, and it will probably last a little bit longer because of the UV protection, the natural UV protection we put in it, or the food-safe UV protection that we put in it.
One thing that, as a side result of my own experiments here on my little ranch here, is that I became very interested in vermiculture and the worms.
Sure.
And as a result of both your requiring the red wrigglers for the center and some neighbors that are actually doing this on a larger scale.
Right.
I have my own little worm farm.
Yeah,
and,
isn't
it
fun?
So cool.
It is cool.
I mean, it's just
gotta
great.
Gotta love the worms.
Yeah, they are absolutely wonderful. And I take my scraps from juicing, and then I go a step further. I take things that are too large, and I put them in the blender.
Right.
And make in the Cuisinart, and
I do the same thing. Yeah.
I break it up for the worms, and then I put it in the corners, and they are just the happiest.
You know what you can also do, and I found this on YouTube. A gentleman was blending his kitchen scraps,
uh-huh.
And then he was putting that liquid in ice cube trays.
Oh.
And so he would have a ready, you know, a steady stream of available compost. And when he would go out to his compost, for instance, when he raked his leaves, and he's got all that carbon in there, he had to add some nitrogen, he'd just sprinkle some of these cubes throughout the pile, and they would melt and do their thing, and then he would get his ratio corrected.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Was a pretty cool idea, yeah, the way he
was
doing it.
Well, you know, another thing that I discovered, this is a little off topic, but that's okay, mm-hmm. we're just talking here, is I discovered a straw bale gardening.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That is an amazing thing. I bought 20 bales of straw, and I am breaking them down using nitrogen and a bacterial, and you can plant in these, and they're at eye level. Of course, it's nothing like the garden tower, but
you know, it works.
These are all innovative ways that we can try different things and put some excitement back into farming and gardening again.
Yeah, make it fun, make it easy.
Yeah,
yeah. And there's no reason people can't do this. The only reason people can't do it is if they lack access to, you know, a flat surface. Even people in cities often have a balcony, and you can grow food on your balcony. Unfortunately, most people are stuck using containers that are not space efficient. So if you're going vertically, like you're in a garden tower, it's a lot easier. But you know, we have forgotten as a culture how to do it, and it's incredible. If you think back to, you know, I'm sure we're all familiar. Anyone that's probably over 20 remembers reading in the history books of the Victory Gardens during World War II, where think it was something like 90% of the food grown was grown really locally, you know, like your backyard locally, and you don't see that now, and it's a little bit surprising considering the cost of food, you know.
Well,
and
yeah,
I think people
are starting to find out.
Oh yeah. Gardening is definitely growing, but it's taken a while. And I think people just, they have the wrong assumption that they, A, don't have the time, or B, don't have the knowledge. And there are things out there that are really easy that don't take much time. Just like you said, the straw bales, you know. That's one way of doing it. My mom's doing something that's really pretty wild. I mean, it's not a new idea. I think they've probably been doing it for thousands of years.
Okay.
She's taken a pile of logs and covered that with dirt and branches, and then nothing but dirt on the outside. This thing's probably a little over, probably about four and a quarter feet tall. And then she's putting plants all on the outside. The purpose for the twigs and the logs on the inside is to hold the moisture, where the water just going into your soil would drain right through.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's going right into the wood.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a drought-resistant garden. You know, that's something that people in California that you know, don't want to spend money on a garden tower could be utilizing that method. I unfortunately don't know what it's called, but it's a brilliant way to conserve water.
Yeah.
And that will probably last several years.
Yeah,
it's basically acting like a sponge on the inside. And some of those logs she has in there, from my memory, are many, many inches in diameter, and then all the way down to twigs. So
I've got several cut-up trees that, you know, I'm using for stumps, you know, for decoration, but they could easily be placed in a trench. That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, you could actually do that with a cut tree. She has another pile that is on an actual cut tree that was really large. And that particular pile will probably last, I don't know, 10 years, I would guess. I mean, it was probably 4 feet in diameter.
Well, now, what about the idea that since we are in a drought, I mean, many of my guests in previous times have indicated that it's a manufactured drought, but whether it is or not doesn't matter. We're still in one.
We're still in one, right.
Many are using the rainwater from the roof and capturing that in barrels and using that for watering during the dry times. And then there's gray water as well, so... there are all kinds of solutions.
Well, yeah, as long as it's still legal.
Well, this is a problem.
Yeah, in some places.
it does seem that there is a push to make things illegal that are
right.
That should be free, like air and water. And
right.
Wasn't it the chairman of Nestle's that said that people should have to pay for water or something?
I think you're correct on that. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're taking the water from California and have been for decades.
Right.
They're draining it from the rivers and then
sure.
selling it back to people in as bottled water.
Yeah, at like a 40,000% markup.
Yeah, I mean, talk about rape and pillage.
I know.
And the corporations have, just about no real liability because they have banks of lawyers and
yep.
they're people. They're legally people, so you can't
sure.
really sue them.
Yeah, and you know the people that live in California, you guys are going to be paying an awful lot for your vegetables real soon, and you do something differently to take back control of your food, like with the garden tower, and suddenly you're using much less water than you would in a conventional garden, and you're not eating crap, you're eating healthy food, and you're taking control of your health.
Yeah,
you know, you're taking back control of your health. So yeah, I mean it's a real problem. It's horrifying to look at the maps. You know, I thought it was a problem just in California until about uh-huh. a month ago, and then I started looking at the heat map, the drought map, and it's like a third of the country.
I think that this is going to be something that's not going to go away, and people,
right.
All of us tend to be to put our heads in the sand like an ostrich.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot easier than looking at the facts and the realities around us.
Yeah.
But those who have been doing that are going to wake up to find out that, this is going to be a different world. There's no food. There's no water.
Yeah.
What do we do? And being rich isn't going to help you because at some point money won't buy you anything. You
right.
know, you can throw gold bricks at people and all you'll do is break a window.
Right.
But
I read a study, Lance. I can't remember. This is probably 3 years ago I read this. One of the countries in the Arab Peninsula, and I think it was Saudi Arabia, but I could be wrong, you know, nothing but arid region everywhere over there, and horrible soil for growing food, mostly sand. They started manipulating the weather and created an oasis so that they could actually grow food in a desert region.
Huh.
Now, California is a desert region, far as I know.
Right.
And if they're doing it over there, I don't see why they can't be doing it in here. I mean, weren't we seeding the clouds in Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam during the war to give them constant monsoon rain seasons? I mean, it just doesn't make sense that they can't turn this thing around. You just got to wonder, you know, if there's someone behind it, who's behind it, and what's their inevitable goal.
Well, it does seem that there's some kind of agenda to move the organic farmers out of this California. And then, the banks are notorious for setting up amazingly huge pump-and-dump operations like the Great Depression. You know,
right.
My father lived through that. That was a created event.
Sure.
And, some people are aware of that, others are not.
Yep.
But these things are designed, and they have a purpose, and the purpose is to grab up all the resources. And, you know, if people are starving in breadlines, that's not their concern. They laugh about that. It's funny.
Right.
So,
you know, it's interesting because I agree with you. And I look at the current situation, which was, you know, currently or arguably designed by the people behind the Black Curtain.
Right.
But I don't know if they're going to get away with it this time. I mean, if they're looking for global domination and, you know, a one-world currency, I don't think they're going to be successful in that. And if you really start to look into it, and I actually do, finance or geopolitics and global finance is kind of a hobby of mine. Yeah, I don't know why. It's just something I've been studying for years. I don't know why. The Asian countries, in conjunction with Russia, are setting up what's called the AIIB, which is an Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank.
Yeah.
And it will be gold-backed. And so what they're doing in conjunction with that is they're setting up a system to replace what's called the SWIFT system. And the SWIFT system is what Western banks use to exchange money between themselves, between banks.
Uh-huh.
And when you have the system, SWIFT system, and have control of it, then you really have control over how companies trade their goods and services. And when you have the world reserve currency like we do, and you control the BIS and the SWIFT system, then you control everything. Well, that's changing with this introduction of the AIIB, which will be, I believe they're going to test it September, October.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's been happening since the collapse in this country in 2008 is the countries that are not wanting to participate with the United States any longer with our corruption are moving away from our system and adopting this new system. And I think something like 140 countries have signed up for this in the last, say, 90 days.
Mm.
When you see Korea or South Korea, Japan, and Germany sign up to it, then you know.
Right.
Then you know.
Right.
They're getting real close, and September is not far away, and it's going to be a gold-backed system, and basically what it's going to enable countries to trade goods and services and make the difference up with gold certificates, but there's actually going to be gold behind the certificates. So it's a gold-backed trading mechanism to eliminate the need for the U.S. dollar as your mechanism of trade.
Right,
and when that starts happening, they're going to introduce the renminbi, the yuan, the Chinese currency, as the new reserve currency for world trade, and that's already starting to happen. And you see bilateral trade happening right now with India, with Russia, with China being the biggest players. But then you have a lot of countries in South America, a lot of countries in Europe that are starting to adopt this also, where they're trading outside of the dollar system. So that's been happening. People don't know about it because it's not reported. But that's been happening quite a lot this year and last year. But it's really starting to accelerate. And when they get to a certain level of acceptance and they announce the amount of gold that they purchased since 2008, as these Asian countries in India and Russia have been purchasing massive amounts of gold as we sell all our gold,
right,
so that they can back their banking system with gold, so that they each of their countries, if they have a currency, it has actual value to it. When that happens, then all of these countries that hold 40% of our debt, because 40% of the U.S. treasuries are held offshore, mostly in banks, and it's what the banks and the corporations use for trade. Well, when it's no longer believed to be safe because there's something safer out there, then it comes back to us. Then that money comes back to us, and then you have a massive collapse of our currency, a devaluation of our currency. And I think that's right around the corner. I think that's a year or two at the most, off.
Well,
I don't know the timing, but I'm pretty sure it's going to happen.
That's something that I've seen circulating for quite some time.
Yeah.
Even my dad, when I was a kid, said that the dollar was worthless.
Yeah.
He said the Bilderbergs own the world.
Yeah.
And, he was talking about the Bilderbergs when I was just a kid, and now, of course, Alex Jones has popularized the secret meetings by the Bilderberg group.
But the Bilderberg, I believe, and I could be totally wrong on this, but I believe, that's the European Western power elite. Well, the Chinese aren't part of that system, and neither are the Russians.
Right. Now, about the system that you're talking about, how does that relate to BRICS, which seems to be...
Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. Those are the initial countries that were trying to eliminate the need for the dollar. At least this is my interpretation of it. The initial kind of powerhouse countries that were trying to trade outside of the dollar system.
Okay.
Now, we all know what happened to Saddam Hussein when he announced he was going to trade oil for dollars. And we know what happened to Muammar Gaddafi when he announced he was going to trade oil for dollars. Because those were people we could actually take out. Well, you're not going to, take out Angela Merkel. When enough of these larger countries, the BRICS were the initiators, now it's global. You have 140 countries that have signed this new trade agreement. And that's growing, you know, I don't know if it's growing every day, but I know that the last time I checked, which was about a month ago, there was 140 signatures from leaders of countries. So it's moving with great momentum. It's going to be tested at the end of the summer, and it's going to cause, you know, global shockwaves in the whole financial system. And that's just one of the things that could cause a global shock to the financial system. But that one's coming. That's you know,
it
there's
seems
no
inevitable.
Getting around that.
Well,
it is inevitable. Yeah.
When you think of all the collateralized debt that was bundled
right.
up and sold, and they're still doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still
they're
taking
increasing
this
it.
Bad
I know.
Debt. I mean,
I know. God. I remember first hearing about the derivative problem in 2008.
Yeah.
And now it's like 30% bigger.
Oh yeah, it's like this isn't just a bubble. This is a universe.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
going to collapse. And it's inevitable because it's
yeah.
you know at
it
some
is.
Point you can't hold the ball under the water any longer. Your
right.
arms get tired and the ball pops up and hits
yeah.
flies in the air, and so yeah. sooner or later there will be equilibrium and balance restored, and that's
going to
be
is.
A very painful process.
Yeah, but needed. Be very
people,
like,
and
like
need,
if,
much needed. Much
yeah,
needed.
I mean, had they cleaned the table in 2008 and let those banks fail, we
oh, yeah.
would have been through
oh, yeah.
it. It would have been horrible, but we'd be way better off now.
Oh, my
you know, all
God.
All these years
yeah.
later, way better off
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
Without question.
No, it was extortion at the highest levels.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
really is banks, robber barons
yeah.
holding up the government right in the public eye on television.
On television, yeah.
And
remember that?
Making a fool out
yeah.
of the whole governmental system and the
yeah.
whole United States, and yet we still say, God bless America.
Yeah.
And you
and
know,
worship Obama.
Yeah, and we wave our flags and the rest of it,
yeah.
and we
Nobel
don't
Peace
have
Prize.
A clue that
yeah.
we've been screwed in the butt. With
well,
no
I
clue.
Think I think people kind of they're starting to figure out they've been screwed.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think most.
They don't know what
you
know, to do about it.
Do you
but
find that
you'll talk?
Do you find that you talk to people and you know you get on a sidetrack and you talk about this stuff and it's amazing how many people actually know about it.
No, I actually find the opposite.
Okay. All right. Well, that was an honest answer.
Yeah, I'll be honest.
Okay.
No,
and maybe not in Indiana.
Yeah. Well, I'm in a pretty cool kind of like a oasis in the center of the state called Bloomington, and
oh,
it's
nice.
Very different than the rest of the state.
Oh no. Nice.
But no, I tend not to bring it up because people look at me like I'm from Pluto. They're like, "What are you?
Oh, well, that's
you,
true.
What are you talking
that's
about?
True. Yeah.
You know, it's."
Right.
It's not in the you're not going to see this unless you dig this type of information. And I would like to give one name out for people that find this conversation interesting.
Sure.
I spent about a year, I would say, trying to find financial analysts that were telling the truth. And
uh-huh.
the reason I did that is I was reading, when I started to become interested in this field, I was reading the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, Clippinger, New York Times, Money, Fortune, all of those religiously, and was for, you know, a couple of years. And I just was getting this sense, as I was teaching myself economics, I was getting the sense that this is a bunch of bullshit,
mm-hmm.
that this isn't really what's actually happening. This is, they're feeding me crap, and
yep.
it's not what I'm actually seeing.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I went on the Internet. I didn't actually get on the Internet until I was 38 because I lived on a barrier beach. I was off the grid for years and, you know, just wasn't connected. And when I got on the Internet, I started searching for analysts that would give you their past predictions going back years so that I could, you know, find out whether they knew what they were talking about.
Uh-huh.
And I spent about a year analyzing different analysts. And the best guy that I found was a guy named Dr. Jim Willey.
Huh.
And he's a PhD statistician. He's not an economist he wasn't trained as an economist, which is probably why he's good at economics. Because
uh-huh.
he wasn't fed the Keynesian crap that they do in the universities.
Uh-huh.
He's self-taught, but he's a PhD statistician from Carnegie Mellon. He's
oh.
a super bright guy, and he's been doing it long enough to have a lot of people that are on the inside that kind of got caught up in the system but aren't agreeing with their role in it. Or,
uh-huh.
you know, they're feeding them information. And on top of that, he publishes his past predictions.
Oh, interesting.
Going back years. And his accuracy is around 80-85%.
And what's his name again?
It's Dr. Jim Willie.
Okay, good.
W-I-L-L-I-E, Willie.
All right.
He has a website called The Golden Jackass.
I like it. Which is what his mom called him
when he was a kid. Yeah, and the nice way to absorb the information that he has is he does a lot of radio interviews. There's probably a new one, roughly every 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, that's a wonderful tip for us.
Yeah, Colin, it took me a long time to find that guy. So yeah, that's good information.
Well, this is what I appreciate and why people love these shows, because we find out things. And
yeah.
We can get right to the heart of the matter, and we don't have to do a lot of research.
Right,
Colin, I wanted to ask you something while we're still on the air. That what is one of your biggest concerns about the concern, just in general, your biggest concerns that you have about things in general? I mean, we could point to a lot of different things, the fake wars that are going on, the chemtrails, the fluoride in the water, blah, 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 but the GMOs, and obviously you're addressing those situations. Mm-hmm. What is the most pressing and disturbing thing that you're concerned about?
Oh, my God, there's so many. I would literally know where to start. I can't give you just one. I'm gonna touch on two, maybe three. And I'm going to start with the food, because that's the business I'm in. I have a huge concern of these genetically modified seeds, when they're planting in the field, and then they become airborne, they populate into a non-GMO field, and they destroy the purity of that crop as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you could inevitably see a situation where it just envelops the globe. Well, if you have 100,000 garden towers in 100 countries, spaced out all over the country, you can't have that happen. And what one of the things I intend to do when I have more time is to do a video series with each individual vegetable that you can grow in a garden tower. I will show people how to save the seeds from that vegetable.
Oh, good, good. That's a very good, very
that helpful. Way, if you're starting with a local heirloom, non-genetically modified organic seed, you can continue to propagate that plant, as
wonderful.
Forever.
Wonderful.
And that way, we can prevent the GMOs from taking over the planet. And that's part of how I can help. I don't know what more I can do, but I think if I sell enough towers and I convince enough people to grow, to start with the right seeds, then we can save these seeds on a global level. I mean, they have that seed bank, I believe, in Sweden, up in the
Reykjavik, Arctic. Sweden, yes.
But that's, they could drop a bomb on that. I mean, that doesn't seem too safe, keeping them all in one place. I'd rather them be in 10,000 locations across the globe.
Right.
And they won't even know
that's
where
right.
they are. So that's one of that's a huge concern of mine. The other one, coming from a more of a economic perspective, is currency collapse. And I do not think I think 99% of Americans don't even know what's coming, and 99% of Americans aren't prepared for it. And I think I think what will more than likely happen is you'll have a bank holiday like they sure talked a lot about back in 2009 and 2008 when Hank Paulson was threatening us with martial law if we didn't pay the banks off. And in a currency collapse situation or a devaluation, it would be overnight. So you wake up the next day and your dollar is worth 30% less than it was the day before. With 49 million people on food stamps, I don't see that scenario ending well. And so my biggest concern is, when people have nothing left to lose, and then they lose everything, they lose it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that lose it looks like, but I don't think it's peaceful.
Right.
And
right.
you can see the powers that be gearing up for that. I mean, with their ammunition purchases and their FEMA camps and everything else. I mean, clearly they know something's coming. So you don't need proof on an economic level. You can see what Big Brother's doing every day.
That's right.
They know something's coming, and we need to be prepared, on an individual basis. And that means, prepared. You need to start putting some food away, you know, some toilet paper for that matter.
Right.
You know,
right.
Maybe if you have the resources, planting a garden would be a good idea, folks. Maybe getting some chickens, some solar panels. Just become as self-sufficient as you can.
Yeah.
I don't believe we have a lot of time to prepare for this, and I think it's inevitable if you study it like I do, that this is inevitable. This is coming. I can't tell you when. I think it's within the next couple of years. I suspect
I agree.
It's next year. But there's things we can do. There's things we can do to prepare for it. And one of the best things to do, I think, is to get to know your neighbors, your community, form a support group. Understand that we can't get through this alone. And there are things we can do on an individual basis, but, you know, we are surrounded by people.
Yeah.
And people can be our best ally, you know, against the system. So, you know, get out there and form groups of like-minded people and help each other and start figuring out how to, you know, just think, what can you do when money doesn't work? And that's what you need to do. That's what you need to prepare for. And it's going to become, you know, I think we're going to need to do this. We're going to do it really quickly. So that's probably my biggest concern. And this isn't even something I talked to my friends about, because I'm like, crunch class, what are you talking about? The dollar's
yeah,
doing
I
great.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
I
see it coming too, and so do most of the people that I talk to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you hang out with some intelligent people then. I tend not to bring it up amongst the people I hang out with. They're just like, what are you talking about? I mean, some know, obviously. But, you know, we need more people to wake up to this.
Colin,
yeah.
We've got about maybe a little less than a minute left.
Okay.
How would you like to end on a positive note and then make sure that people know where they can find you? And
Sure.
I just want to take a second to thank you so much for coming on the show, because I love what you're doing. I'm going to start teaching people how to do the garden tower on my property.
And
that'll be fun. But what would you like to close the show with today?
Well, what I like to close with is that anybody can do this. It's really easy. As you know, you own one. And we are what we eat. And if you want a healthy life, you need to have healthy food. And not just the garden tower. I'm not the only solution. You need to start growing your own food. You need to start growing it organically. And you need to start using organic methods to do it. And it's easy, and it doesn't cost a lot of money, and everyone can do it. And, you know, I guess that's one way I would like to close. If people want to utilize the system that I've created, it's gardentowerproject.com, and we have lots of helpful information on there. But I'm not the only system out there. You know, pick what fits. You know, you can just use the earth. You don't need to use a system like mine. And I really enjoyed this, Lance, and I'd be more than happy to come back. And I will be calling you Monday, one way or the other, to do a follow-up and to set you up. And hopefully you can be our guy in Northern California when people want to, you know, see this in real life, in real time, working on a living farm. It can be you. They can come visit you. So I think that's
absolutely.
Work.
And they can come to the Zany Mystic Ranch and
there you go.
See the garden tower. And,
Sounds great.
Yes, I would be happy and delighted to do that.
Awesome. We'll talk Monday. And good night, folks. Thanks for
listening. All right. Thanks a lot, Colin. Good night, everybody.